This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the coupon code WARROCKETAJAX to get $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax, to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. And that is unexpectedly weird to say in mid-afternoon. I was not expecting for it to be that weird, but it is. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are recording in daylight for the first time in quite a while for reasons that will soon become apparent. I am Chris Sims. With me, as sometimes, is emergency backup co-host Kieran Chiak. Kieran, how are you today?
I'm doing quite well. It's a lovely sunny day in Manchester, England. I've had a nice day out to the comic shop with a friend. It's all right.
Did you get X-Men 92? Did you get multiple copies of X-Men 92, perhaps?
I already have multiple copies of X-Men 92. I have I have the digital versions of The Secret Wars, the single version of The Secret Wars, and the trade version of The Secret Wars miniseries.
It sounds to me like you could be buying more. Like, I don't want to put any pressure on you. I just feel like you could be buying more, Kieran. You don't have, you need a reading copy and a one to save, obviously. One for the future market when it's going to be so valuable.
And I need the individually framed copies to go along my wall.
Yeah, and you need a signing copy. Like, look, everybody should get at least 5 to 6 copies of this comic. That's all. That's all I'm saying. As you can probably tell, Matt Wilson is out this week. So, Kieran, welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining me.
No worries. I'm always happy to step in when available.
Let's just get into it. We've got a great show for everybody. Adam Riches is going to be here during our interview segment. He's going to be talking about his work on some of the, I guess, more esoteric sides of comic book art. Not just doing comic book art, but also drawing packaging for the G.I. Joe figures, designing professional wrestling costumes. Outfits. What do you, gear, I guess is the word for that, right,
attire?
Kieran?
I would have gone
attire.
Attire.
You know what? Superstar Threads. He designed Superstar Threads. Let's just say that one. That's going to be a fun conversation, but right now, I think we're just going to get into our checks and wrecks. All right, Kieran, you are the guest, so as is tradition, why don't you go first? What are you checking in with this week?
Well, I always overanalyze this whenever I'm on the show because like, I need to find something interesting that I did this week, and I don't do a lot of I don't do MMA, I don't have a lot of stuff, I'm not writing a book, but I did figure because I'm only on like once a year, and also I did want to mention as well that I figured out that this is my 5th time on War Rocket Ajax, 5 timers club, but because it is because I'm only on like around once a year, I can expand my check to within the recent few weeks or so. So my check is, and if you follow me on Twitter, you know this, I got engaged 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, congratulations, man.
So that was really exciting. We talked about it on our podcast, Journey to Misery, but for my girlfriend Helena, my fiance Helena, for her birthday, I surprised her with a trip back to visit her mum and sister in St. Albans. She had no idea we were going to St. Albans at all, until we were waiting to be picked up from Milton Keynes by her sister, and I said, your sister's going to be here in 20 minutes. That was the first thing she knew about what we were doing. Then the day of her birthday, she had no idea what we were doing. We got the train into London, the tube into Camden, and she still didn't know where we were going until she saw the sign that said, London Zoo, 240 yards away. And at that point, like, because you've heard Helena when she gets excited.
Yes.
And you know how much Helen loves the zoo. So
we
had a lovely day at the zoo, and whilst there, I proposed. But here's the weird thing about the proposal. I had it planned to propose to her in front of the lions, because there's this big new Land of the Lions thing at London Zoo. And for Helena's dissertation, she's been having to go to the London Zoo website a lot, and she's been going, oh, I want to go to London Zoo. I want to see the new lions thing. So, okay, that's where I'll propose. About 2 weeks before we went away, she woke up and she said, I had a dream that you proposed to me and there was a lion there.
See, that's weird, because I know that this proposal has been coming for a long time, because, you know, you and I are friends. We talk a lot. I know that you have been planning this out. This has been a meticulously planned operation. So my theory is that you talk in your sleep.
No, because I do talk in my sleep sometimes, but it's always just weird words like purple or I just laugh.
All right, can I tell you my favorite thing about your proposal?
Go on.
My favorite thing is, again, if people aren't familiar with Kieran and Helena, you should obviously listen to the Journey into Misery podcast. It's an absolute hoot. Helena loves animals. Helena loves the zoo. And so my favorite thing is, if you're just going through Helena's Twitter, it's like, here's a picture where we're at the zoo. I almost did an impression of Helena, and I'm not going to do the impression of Helena that I do when I'm reading her tweets out loud to Aiden, to you. But rest assured that I do one for both of you. So there's a, you know, oh, hey, we're going to the zoo. Oh, hey, here's a goat. Oh, hey, I got engaged. Oh, hey, here's lions. Like, it's just in the middle of all these pictures of animals.
I think the actual Instagram post was, I got engaged and also there was a goat. Attached to a picture, a selfie of her and the goat.
That is a good engagement story. Did you invite the goat to the wedding, though? Are you going to?
I may do. The goat was pregnant, so it may be busy. I'm not sure when the wedding is, probably in like 4 years' time at this rate.
Yeah, that's going to be a long pregnancy for a goat.
But also, afterwards, we came back from the zoo, went back to St. Albans, and I took her to the pub she used to work at, and all of her friends were there waiting for her, and then all of her family came out half an hour later. Some of my family that lives nearby popped around for about half an hour, and it was just it was a great time, just making the day really about her. Because as of today, she's just done her penultimate exam for university. She's got one more, which will be tomorrow when you're listening to this. So my entire April has been, what can I do to help Helena feel better and lower the stress? So that was a really nice trip that we were able to take.
Well, that's good. That's really good, and it's very nice. Everyone should go check out your zoo engagement photos. My check is not quite as life-changing as yours. I think you've got the big check for the year 2016, probably. But a couple things happened. They just announced the next arc of X-Men 92, which involved Chadden and me saying, like, haha, wouldn't it be funny if we did a story where we had a real-life band guest starring like they used to do back in the 90s? And then, like, 15 minutes later, like, we said that in an email, joking, and literally 15 minutes after that, Jordan emailed us, and he was like, yeah, I checked around. I think I can get the Toadies and the Flaming Lips. And so we have the Toadies and the Flaming Lips in the second arc of X-Men 92. That's and they announced it in Billboard magazine, which was an unusual experience, but it's pretty fun. Wayne Coyne said he wanted to write a song about the X-Men, so that's exciting. But personally, here's the thing I did this week. I mentioned this on last week's show, and I definitely wanted to talk about it. Kieran, have you ever had a sleep study?
I have not. I saw the photos of yours, but after seeing it, I don't think I'd want to have one.
Yeah, it was terrible. I hope I never have to do that again. And as I was leaving, the tech was like, well, you're probably gonna have to do another one. And I was like, haha, no, no, I'm not going to, but thank you. Basically, I went to the doctor a month ago for my annual checkup, and I mentioned that I have sleep apnea. Because when you are sleeping next to someone regularly, you find out things about yourself. I knew I snore, and I knew I snore really loud because, you know, I have shared hotel rooms. I mean, gosh, Kieran, I've shared a hotel room with you. You know what I'm like.
Yeah, I've slept next to you.
Yeah, you've literally slept in the bed with me, and so you know how loud my snoring can be. So I mentioned that to the doctor, and he was like, well, we'll get a sleep study, and that way, if you do have sleep apnea, we can prove it to your insurance company, and they can cover whatever you need. So I'm like, cool. So I go in for this, and first of all, I had to be there at 7:45 p.m. If you are a regular listener, you'll know that I'm a bit of a night owl, so that was unusual. And they told me, like, yep, you're coming in at 7:45. We'll wake you up at about 5 o'clock in the morning. And so I was like, oh, well, this is going to be fun. This is going to be great. So I went in. There was a little room with a bed in it. And hilariously, there was a sign on the bed that said the no wake zone. It was like a little headboard that they'd gotten at Pottery Barn or something. And I was hooked up. You, I believe, described it as looking like the Winter Soldier. I went with the Barry Windsor Smith Weapon X. I had two electrodes on each leg, three on my chest. I had these two weird belts that were monitoring where I was actually breathing, like whether I was breathing with my chest or my diaphragm. I had three on my chin, one on my throat, one next to each eye, and then one in my forehead, and eight on my hair. And then I had one of those little, breathing things that rubbed my nose raw. I was just getting over a cold, too, so everything about this was terrible. So then they just, put you in a little room, and you're supposed to sleep. I did not realize that I had slept at all. I thought I was awake the entire night, but it turns out that was not the case. Apparently I did sleep, and apparently I did snore. So, but yeah, if you ever had a sleep study, boy, is it a pain. They got me up at 4:55. Aiden had to get up at 4:55 to come pick me up. And then I came home, I took a shower, I put dish detergent on my hair to wash out the glue that they use to stick the electrodes to your scalp. And then I slept for another 6 hours, and it felt like Sunday. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon, but it feels like that Sunday is like a month ago. It's so weird. It messed up my schedule so much. But yeah, sleep study, not a fun time. But as medical procedures go, it's not super invasive and it's perfectly fine. But yeah, just not fun.
It seems weird to me that if they want to get an accurate reading of how you sleep, they'd say, well, you need to go to sleep at this time and wake up at this time. Because that's not how sleep works.
Yeah, I know that other people, I was talking to some friends, and one of my friends was like, yeah, when I did it, they ask, what time do you normally go to sleep? And I told them around 1 o'clock, and so they worked with me on that. And I was like, nope, I went in at 7:45, and they had me in bed at 9. I usually sleep on my stomach, and I couldn't because I was obviously covered in electrodes. So I had to lay in Shavasana, the corpse pose, all night, which was also not fun. There was no reading lamp in the room, which I was very upset by. So I just played 3DS for an hour and listened to the Attitude Era podcast. But yeah, it's weird. I wish they could have literally just brought in Aiden and be like, okay, what does he do when he sleeps? All right, thank you. You're done. But yeah, now is the time for our recommendations. Kieran, do you have a rec this week?
Oh, boy, do I. I was talking to some friends about this over the weekend. I went to grab a couple of beers with some friends, and these friends are really into hip-hop and R&B. So I said to them, there's something I want to talk to you about now, but I kind of feel like a cult member was trying to explain why you should like it. And that's how I feel now, because I want to talk about Hamilton.
Okay. I'm ready for this.
I want to comment it specifically from the viewpoint of someone who 2 weeks ago was completely, I don't understand why everyone loves Hamilton, it's probably not that good. And 2 weeks later is nearly crying in Tesco listening to It's Quiet Uptown. It's so good, Chris. And it shouldn't be. Like, I was talking to my friends over the weekend and I played them a couple of songs and we were all just talking about, if you told me a year ago there'd be a hip-hop musical on Broadway, I would think it would be the most cringeworthy thing imaginable. But I'm just captivated by it. The music is really great. The story, I keep just getting more and more into it. I don't know if it's because I don't have any experience with musicals, because I keep saying stuff to Helena and she's like, yeah, that's how musicals work. But I love the callbacks and how the musical stings and how each character has their own little melody and there's lines that get repeated and they come back and they mean totally different things. And it's kind of like the, and I imagine this is the case for all musicals, it kind of has its own continuity within itself, and that's something that appeals to me. So if you're not aware of what Hamilton is, it's a hip-hop musical about the rise and fall of founding father Alexander Hamilton, where it's the cast is almost entirely people of colour, except there's one white guy who is the King of England. Everyone else, all the American characters, are black and Puerto Rican and Dominican and so on. And that's to represent the old and the new, and like the British character sings in like a classic musical style while everyone else sings in like hip-hop and R&B. There's one song that's like an Usher song. There's stuff that's like Destiny's Child. There's stuff that's like Lil' Kim. I'm really enjoying picking apart the references and stuff, because there's references to hip-hop. Like, do you know about the cabinet meetings in it?
Yeah, I've heard, I want to say most of it. I've probably heard about 75% of it. Aiden has the soundtrack, and I ended up getting the book it's based on, the Alexander Hamilton biography. I got it for us, really, for Christmas. I haven't read it yet. So, like I said, maybe 75% of it. So I don't know how it ends. How does it end? I feel like it probably ends with Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr being best friends forever, right? And definitely not one of them shooting the other.
Well, the first song does end.
Yeah, the first song tells you what happens. I also know about history.
Well, I was saying, I think I was saying to Jay Edidin, the only thing I knew about Alexander Hamilton was there's a lyric in Lazy Sunday by The Lonely Island where they say, "You can call me Aaron Burr, by the way, I'm dropping Hamiltons." That was my entire knowledge of the man's life. I knew he was a person, he was on the $10 bill, and he was killed by Aaron Burr. That was entirely it.
Yeah, there used to be... Do you have the Got Milk commercials in England?
I've seen the Hamilton parody of it, but...
Yeah, because there was one... There was a big long-running one in the 90s, and... It involves a guy eating a peanut butter sandwich, and he gets like a call from a radio station. He gets a call on a landline from a terrestrial radio station. So it's a very 1990s commercial. And the whole deal is that like he's, you know, in the, you know, Aaron Burr exhibit of the Alexander Hamilton Museum. And they're going to give him like $10,000 if he can answer the question of, you know, who shot Alexander Hamilton, and he can't because he's got a mouthful of peanut butter, and if only he had a glass of milk, he could have, you know, gotten that peanut butter out of his mouth and won $10,000. And that's like, I think about that commercial a lot, because at the time, you know, that is a relatively obscure trivia fact about the founding fathers. You know, Alexander Hamilton was never a president. As you know, you've heard the musical. Mm-hmm. He's one of the lesser known figures of the era until like 8 months ago. And that, like, I think about the commercial, I'm like, well, that would never, like, that's a weird thing that now everyone knows, that now a bunch of teenagers are obsessed with.
Well, I think you like as well for the references in it. Like, the cabinet battles are presented as rap battles, like 8 Mile or something, and the first one starts with, "You could have been anywhere in the world right now, but you're here with us." And there's like a bunch of those like little like hip hop and like New York hip hop references sprinkled throughout it. So it appeals to everyone that could be coming to it. There'll be something in it where you're like, "I know about that." Like, whether it's musicals, history, hip hop, there's a lot to sink your teeth into. Like, my biggest thing was when Charles Lee showed up. I was like, "Charles Lee, he's the bad guy in Assassin's Creed 3. That was But yeah, I can't recommend it enough. I've become obsessed with it over the past 2 weeks.
Like I said, I've heard most of the soundtrack. I really, unsurprisingly, I really like the King George song, like the kind of Beach Boys-y "You'll Be Back" song. I think it's really, really good. But yeah, I am not a guy who likes musicals, but it's a historical hip hop musical. So I like two of those three things. And I've really enjoyed everything I've heard. And I'm kind of in the position where I want to sit down and just listen to the soundtrack start to finish. But I also kind of want to wait, because you know that there's going to be a filmed version of the stage play. There's, if not, I mean, if they're not already working on the movie, then it's, they're silly. Like, it's ridiculous.
But I just read an interview yesterday in Complex. It was an interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Chance the Rapper. And he says they've got no plans on filming it because, like, part of it is to be there.
So. Oh, gosh. I really want to see it. But, you know, it's a phenomenally popular Broadway musical. And the thing about Broadway is it's the only medium we have that only happens on one street. Like, if I, you know, like, you're gonna, if you see Hamilton, Kieran, you have to fly across an ocean.
It is coming to the UK in fall 2017.
Yeah. You know, like, hopefully it'll come to, if it comes to Charlotte or, you know, Durham has a new performing arts center, like, brand new, they could take it to, I'd really like to see it. But I'm, you know, I'm really torn between I want to see this as it's intended as a stage play, and then also, oh, I really want to listen to this soundtrack because the music is very enjoyable. And also, Lin-Manuel Miranda seems like a really, really nice man. So
he really does. We just spent a lot of time watching him on like Stephen Colbert's show and Jimmy Fallon's show and stuff, and he seems very, very likable. There's also good video of Jimmy Fallon singing the King George song while Lin-Manuel Miranda just shouts musicians at him, and Jimmy Fallon like changes the style of the song to like Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, David Bowie, like Bono, all throughout like the 3 minutes of the song.
He seems like a nice fellow.
He does.
And he's going to have an EGOT next year, so good for him.
Absolutely.
My recommendation this week is nowhere near as highfalutin as yours, buddy. And in fact, I think it's something that I've recommended on the show before. I got it last year, and I never finished it. It's a video game. And again, it's not one that needs a lot of press, because I think everybody who would be interested in it has heard of us. But I've recently gone back to Axiom Verge. With the goal of actually finishing it this time. Kieran, are you familiar with this game at all?
Not at all, no.
It is a Metroidvania-style game, but it's very, very heavy on the Metroid. Not quite as heavy on the Castlevania. So if you are someone who likes Metroid a lot, and you haven't played this game, and you probably already have, it's definitely worth checking out. It is interesting, it's pretty, it has that, you know, It has that indie game sort of third act twist that is very easy to see coming if you have played any indie games before. And I know I mentioned this back when I first talked about it here on Ajax, but one of the really cool things about it is that it was made almost entirely by one guy, Thomas Happ, who I believe did all the graphics, all the programming, and did all the soundtrack. And it's got a really really interesting sort of soundtrack and a visual style. You know, it looks like Metroid. It's kind of a side-scrolling 16-bit style game, but there are effects in it that are very much, you know, next generation effects or you know, current generation effects. There's things you can do that cause like ripples to cascade around the screen, and when you shoot enemies, they don't just flash. They get like a static interference pattern on them. It's really interesting, and having, you know, at this point I've gone further into the game than I did before, and I'm loving the way that it's all connected and how well the environment, you know, how much character each of the environments have. It could be a little more intuitive, but I think in the way that Super Metroid is like a masterclass and sort of teaching you how to play the game as you play it, I think Axiom Verge does come pretty close. So if you haven't already checked it out, it's I'm playing it on PS4. It's also available on Steam. It's $20, and I would say it's worth checking out. You know, I think it shows up on the Humble Bundle site every now and then on sale. So give it a play if you enjoy that. And if you're like me and you were just really thinking hard about Castlevania Symphony of the Night the other day, it might help to scratch that that Metroidvania itch until we get Bloodstained and Chasm, finally, which are the games I am waiting for this year. That is it for Checks and Recs. You ready to talk about some comics, Kieran?
Yeah, let's do it.
Alrighty. All right. First up, I think we're going to be talking about... where do you want to start, Kieran? You want to start with Gotham Academy?
Yeah, let's start with Gotham Academy, because I know that's one that's the one we both read. Then there's one that I've read, then there's one that you've read.
Yeah, this is the final issue of Gotham Academy before the series comes back. Something I was very worried about. I did not know. I mean, look, Martian Manhunter is going away with Rebirth. Midnighter is going away with Rebirth. Like, all these, you know, second tier, third tier DC books that I'm really, really enjoying right now, they're all going away. But Gotham Academy slid under that door like Indiana Jones. And I'm super excited about it. So. Yeah, second semester's coming. The Lumberjanes crossover is coming. And apparently there's going to be a one-shot. At the end of this issue, it says there's going to be a mystery one-shot coming before we get second semester. So hopefully we'll get a cool lead-in. This was the yearbook story where other creative teams came in and did, gosh, what were they, like six-pagers? Like four-pagers even? These really short, really fun stories set in the Gotham Academy universe that were each kind of hinting at what could have easily been bigger stories that transpired over the events of the series. And the thing that I love most about this issue specifically is this idea that Gotham Academy has become the place for forgotten Batman villains. We get Professor Milo in this issue. We get the werewolf from Batman the Animated Series. In this issue, we get Silversmith, who I was not expecting to ever see again. I love that is a thing now, where it's like, hey, you know, nobody's doing anything with these old Silver and Bronze Age villains that, you know, don't, you know, we don't want to bring them back and make them mass murderers. Let's make them teachers at Gotham Academy.
Is that, how long do you think it will be until we see that the school chef is Condiment King?
I cannot wait. I hope that happens. I have a list of suggestions, if anyone, unsurprisingly, and if anyone is interested. So yeah, that was a big key element in this issue for me. And also, I loved the way that the actual yearbook framing story ended. It's so cute.
Yeah, I don't think we're giving away too much when we say that the crux of this issue is Maps loses the book that she's been reading from. When it's nicked by, I don't want to say who nicks it, but she has to chase him down, and it has a much more pleasant and heartfelt resolution than you might expect. And it was,
yeah, I mean, like, I want to go ahead and say it, so go ahead and skip ahead if you don't want to hear it. But it's Damien, and there was an implication in the last issue that it was, you know, oh, it's because it's got a secret about Batman, and that turns out to not be what it is. And it's really cute and really fun. And Damien is a really interesting character when he shows up in Gotham Academy. Like, you put him with those kids and he kind of becomes a completely different character than when you put him with Bruce or with Dick even. So definitely go get these last few issues of Gotham Academy if you haven't already. It's an absolute joy to read. Kieran, you wanted to talk about Unbelievable Gwenpool number 2.
Yeah, this is a series that I wasn't super sold on, but the creative team is so strong that I had to give it at least a couple of issues. And it did take two issues, but it has wowed me to the point that I'm all in on it now. It's by Christopher Hastings and Guru Hiru. And my biggest problem with Gwenpool was I don't know what she's supposed to be. I don't know what her deal is. I've got a handle on that now. She is basically Superboy Prime. She's a character. She's a girl from our universe, from the universe that has Marvel Comics, and she reads Marvel Comics. And I think maybe as a result of Secret Wars, she slipped through the gaps and ended up in the Marvel Universe. And she's like, great, I'm a protagonist. I'll get a costume. I'll go be a wacky fourth wall breaking hero. But she's slowly starting to realize that what if she's not a protagonist? What if she's expendable? And that's, the book's a lot more existential than I expected it to be in that regard. And it's really interesting. Batroc is in it. MODOK is in it. Thor, Jane Foster Thor, was in the newest one. And they really play with the idea that Gwenpool reads Marvel Comics or read Marvel Comics, is that she's the only person outside of, say, I think Sam Wilson. Like, only two people know that Jane Foster is Thor, and that's Sam Wilson and Gwenpool. Because Gwenpool read those Jason Aaron issues before she came to the Marvel Universe. And she's able to use that information to succeed in her goal and distract Thor long enough to get the job done. Because she's trying to convince MODOK that she is like a superpowered anti-hero kind, but she's just winging it so far. So everything she's doing is she's kind of using the knowledge of the Marvel Universe to cheat at being a superhero. And it's really fun, like, metatextual stories that are catnip for me. So I'm really, really enjoying it, like, a lot more than I expected to.
Yeah, I have not read these yet. I'm really looking forward to sitting down. And, you know, obviously the standard conflict of interest warning applies. This is, you know, this is one of my editor's books. You know, Jordan, in addition to X-Men 92, does the Star Wars books and the Deadpool books. But I've been a fan of Chris Hastings and Guri Hiro for years now. And I just absolutely am so excited to see them doing a character that has this, you know, kind of weird metatextual element that, you know, I love stories that get to play with things in the universe, like whether it's, you know, Marvel Universe stuff or, you know, the stuff that we played with in X-Men 92 or stuff like Gotham Academy that we just talked about. Like, those are the kind of stories I'm really drawn to. So yeah, I'm super looking forward to sitting down and giving this a shot. Finding out that premise that her name is Gwenpool with an E was kind of the moment that sold me on Gwenpool as a character.
And I think one more I want to talk about is, you want to talk about Power Rangers and tell me why, like, how bonkers it was?
Yeah, this issue of Power Rangers is bananas, Kieran. It's bananas. We're talking about Power Rangers number 3. Kyle Higgins and Henry Presetia are the creative team. This issue opens with a sequence where Tommy's mother rips off her face to reveal Rita Repulsa, and she says, "I'm the only one that loves you, Tommy." And then that is revealed to be a hallucination that Tommy's having, which did not expect Power Rangers comics to get that Freudian right up front. Like, number 3. The idea in this comic is that Tommy's been having hallucinations, that there's like a little piece of Rita that's still left in his head after he first shows up in Green with Evil. And it's kind of going into the idea that, you know, on the show, the Rangers meet this new guy that they've never met before. He turns evil and tries to kill them for 5 episodes. And then he's immediately one of their best friends. Like, he's immediately part of the crew. And you can read a lot into, you know, if you've been reading the Ranger Station recaps that I've been doing at Comics Alliance, you can read a lot into his behavior that makes it a little muddier. But I like the idea that there's a segment of the show that we never saw that's, oh, the Rangers don't trust Tommy. You know, like, they're a little suspicious of him. Not everybody is on board with him coming out of nowhere and being a Ranger. You know, these 5 people who have known each other all their lives. There's also a really clever bit in here. In the last issue, Rita had the putties attack Tommy, and they kind of, you know, merged like, you know, like clay and kind of like putty and kind of enveloped him. And then you find out that what they were doing is making a mold of the dragon dagger to make a copy. And that's a really cool idea that I don't think, you know, that you couldn't do on the show. And that is also something that makes sense logically in that universe. So, yeah. Power Rangers is a weird book, and it's an interesting book because it's certainly not as not quite as for babies as the show. But also, I think, you know, it's kid friendly, and it's also something that's giving long term fans like me something that we haven't seen before on any version of Power Rangers, which is nice. If they can explain how Tommy becomes a doctor, how Tommy gets his PhD in paleontology within the next 10 years, then this book will have accomplished something magical.
I kind of want Tommy to like slowly develop an interest in MMA.
And Christianity.
Starts a clothing line.
All right, that does it for our comics review segment. We're going to be talking to Adam Riches in just a few short minutes. But now it's time to handle a little business. Obviously, Matt is the one who deals with Patreon, so we will be thanking our newest Patreon backers, the people who help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills, when Matt is back next week. But in the meantime, Kieran, what do you know about Loot Crate?
I am aware that it is a box that comes to your door, and it has toys in it, as far as I'm aware.
Well, Kieran, you mostly have it. I'm gonna give you a B minus on that description of Loot Crate. Loot Crate is, like you said, it's a monthly subscription box service. They do send you a box, and it's full of stuff. It's all geek stuff, gamer stuff, pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month. And you get 6 to 8 items that are all built around a theme. There's always a t-shirt. There's always exclusive items that you can't get anywhere else. And the theme for May is power. Now, Kieran, this is where I thought you could maybe sing Kanye West's Power in the background. And if I talk over you enough, then we won't have to pay royalties on that.
I probably could if you gave me a second to get started, but I don't think I will.
No, you don't need to do that. So what do you think of besides Kanye West when you hear the word power?
Spider-Man? Great power comes great responsibility.
Well, it's interesting that you go with that, because here's what we know about the power Loot Crate. It does have 2 Marvel items. I'm guessing there's a lot of ways you could split that. There's a lot of Marvel stuff in the ether right now. In retrospect, my rec should have been Civil War, because I did see that last week and completely forgot that we haven't done a show since I saw that. But there's a lot of Marvel stuff out there. You get a lot of Warcraft stuff. You're going to get a Warcraft item in this crate. You're going to get, I'm going to say, the piece of pop culture that prioritizes power above anything else, Dragon Ball Z. You're going to get something Dragon Ball Z in this month's box. You have until May 19th to sign up, so the deadline is rapidly approaching if you're hearing this when it goes up. And like I said, it's less than $20 a month to get 6 to 8 items from Loot Crate. But what if you want to knock that price down a little cheaper? Kieran, what if you want to knock that price down a little cheaper? Do you have any idea what you could possibly do?
What do I do? I have no idea, Chris. Please help me.
You go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. You enter the coupon code WarRocketAjax. If you're a new subscriber, you will get $3 off your first subscription. That knocks it down to like 16, 17 bucks a month to get all this stuff for the first month. And I know we've had some people already go and sign up to Loot Crate using that. I want to thank everybody who's done that. But if you haven't, lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax, head over and check it out. And use the coupon code WarRocketAjax at checkout if you decide to sign up. And if you want that power crate, do it before this coming Thursday, because May 19th is going to be your deadline to get in on this action. That does it for Loot Crate. We will be back after a brief musical interlude with our interview with Adam Riches. This week is an artist whose work I am extremely familiar with. I think I was super familiar with this work even before I knew who you were and before we started talking about all this stuff. You will know him as one of the artists who does the packaging art for G.I. Joe. That's a big one in my life. Also a bunch of covers that he's done, action figure variants for IDW, Back to the Future, some upcoming work on ROM, I think, right? Can I say that?
You can say that.
Okay, good. Because I don't want to have to edit out any more than we already have in the first minute of this recording. Adam Riches is here. Adam, welcome to the program.
I finally arrived on the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. That's how you know you've made it.
Well, as soon as you said that, I wanted to introduce a co-host and then start thanking Patreon backers. It's like real Manchurian Candidate style.
You're hardwired.
So, Adam, the thing I want to talk about is the G.I. Joe stuff right up front. Like, people know that's what I'm about. You know that's what I'm about. It's what you're about.
You got it.
It's such a weird thing because, you know, I have always thought of G.I. Joe as a cartoon, as a comic. The action figures are, you know, they're the third thing. Like if we're ranking them, they're the third thing. But obviously, I've got a ton of them. But you look at that art, and even as someone who's tied up in comics and who is always thinking about art in one way or another, I very rarely think about the person who's drawing that picture of cesspool, you know, drawing that alley viper. And that's you.
That's me.
You're the guy doing that.
I'm that guy.
How did that gig come about? Because you told me in an email that you have, is it every Joe, every G.I. Joe figure?
I have literally every 3¾-inch G.I. Joe figure made in America from 1982 to current. Which,
now that seems like a suspicious qualifier. Are there foreign made G.I. Joes?
Oh yeah, there are. Yeah, and they're rare and expensive, and they're all crazy paint variants. So I've just decided to not even delve into that. I'm already deep enough.
Yeah. So is that a new obsession? Because I mean, honestly, it doesn't seem like it would be.
Is G.I. Joe a new obsession?
Getting all the figures. Like, are some of those left over from when you were a kid, or did you go and buy all of them as an adult?
No, I just never stopped. I think when it became socially unacceptable to still be playing with toys, I just decided to rebrand myself as a collector and keep going. I was already collecting G.I. Joes before I even have memory. Like, it's as big of a part of me as like breathing at this point.
So how did it come about that you got the job doing the packaging?
Well, a lifelong obsession of G.I. Joe, and all I ever wanted to do was work on G.I. Joe. And so, like anyone that wants to pursue dream jobs, all I was thinking in my head, especially when I was in art school, was how do you get involved with G.I. Joe? And I didn't care in what capacity. So I was trying to pursue stuff with Hasbro. And at the time I was graduating was right when Rise of Cobra was coming out. So G.I. Joe was on a real upswing at that time. And I thought, well, surely this is the best time in the world to get involved. But what I didn't know about toy design at that time is that, you know, they usually work a year out. So it really wasn't the best time because Rise of Cobra wasn't exactly the smash hit that everyone thought it was going to be.
Wait, what?
In fact, you could almost say it was the worst time.
I was sure that movie was an award winner.
Oh, me too. I'm just as dumbfounded as you.
All right, we'll get back to your career path in a second. I want to take a sidebar because it's been a long time since I've had anybody other than Chad Bowers to talk about G.I. Joe with.
Okay.
Just real quick. Your thoughts, one sentence, your thoughts on the movie G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
That I have a contract with Hasbro, and period. Does that end the sentence?
All right, well, look, despite my best efforts, I do not have any work from Hasbro, so I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to say this.
You're going to be the voice of the voiceless.
I will be. Let me drop this pipe bomb real quick on a movie that came out like 10 years ago. That movie's terrible, but this is the but. I can't hate either one of those movies. Retaliation is marginally better, and by that I mean it is as bad in slightly different and more tolerable ways. But G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra is genuinely not good. It does that thing that that movies do where they have to add on a new thing. Like, it's not enough that they're all like super over the top special forces guys. They have to add on the Delta 6 accelerator suits. But here is the but. I can never hate that movie because A, there's like a 5-minute scene of 2 9-year-olds beating the hell out of each other. And B, it's a G.I. Joe movie that ends with President Zartan. And no matter what else that movie did, I was kind of like, well, President Zartan happened.
Well, there is that. Yeah. I can tell you, all you need to know about Rise of Cobra is if you watch the special features, the director, Steven Summers, I think he said, I wrote this great script for a movie. It was called Accelerator, and it was about these robot suits. And I couldn't sell it. But then 20 years later, I found this was the perfect fit for it. And I was like, you know, there's a reason that for those 20 years that movie didn't get made. But
well, that guy needs to go work for WWE Films.
Yeah, really.
From my perspective, G.I. Joe was never a thing. We had Action Man.
Mm.
So I watched G.I. Joe as if it was essentially an original property because I had no connection to the characters at all. So all the accelerator suits and stuff was like, this is what G.I. Joe is, apparently.
Kieran.
You broke my heart.
You broke my heart. Kieran, look, I'll bring some DVDs and some action figures to Pennsylvania this September, and we'll sneak off. And I will educate you on what's real.
On behalf of Americans everywhere, let me just apologize for you thinking that Rise of Cobra was the standard bearer for the G.I. Joe franchise.
My ex-girlfriend at the time loved that film. And you know, when you just start going out with someone and they're like, I want to show you this film. Like, that was the film she was like, yeah, you need to see this film. I was like, okay.
With the first G.I. Joe movie? The one that doesn't even have The Rock in it?
Yeah. It was before the second one came out.
Wow.
Oh boy. Kieran, I think you win.
I think you need to have her on for an interview.
Also, when we watched that, we hadn't seen each other for like 2 weeks because she just got back from San Diego Comic Con, and that was the first thing we did when I went round to hers after 2 weeks away. That was
so the big reunion.
Yeah.
Was like, hey babe, come over. We're gonna watch. Like, even I wouldn't do that. I did. Okay. We did start watching G.I. Joe Retaliation at a New Year's party one time, but that was because me and Chad were drunk, and we really wanted to watch that scene where Firefly breaks Cobra Commander out of super prison. But this is a big digression.
Yeah, the G.I. Joe movie podcast.
Oh man, like this might end up being bonus content, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. But Adam, how did you, like, were they like, oh yeah, it would have been a great time for you to join up a year ago, like 10 months ago?
No, I had just, you know, like everyone, you try and get an internship and it gets you nowhere, and you keep trying and it gets you nowhere. And then I had started making some contacts with people. I went to Ringling College of Art and Design, so I started making contacts with some alumni that were working at Hasbro and started seeking out advice from them. And then it was just good timing, I guess, that the 2011 G.I. Joe convention was in Orlando, which is only a couple of hours drive from me. So at that point, I'd already been emailing these people, you know, pestering them for the last year. So they all knew who I was and, you know, were running when they saw me. But anyway, that gave me a chance to harass them in person a little bit and ask more questions and hand out portfolios and make the rounds. And eventually just being incredibly persistent, I guess, is what really started to crack it. But in 2008 or 9, whenever it was that IDW first acquired the G.I. Joe license, I had actually started pursuing them first because I thought, well, surely it would be easier to break comics than it would toys, because toys is like the secret society. And it wasn't. So it ended up that toys was actually a lot easier. Go figure. So in 2012, though, the G.I. Joe Collectors Club, they were launching this thing, the Figure Subscription Service, which is a mail order program where you get 13 figures in the mail. And at that time, then it opened the window where they needed a whole bunch of new packaging art. And just from showing them so many samples and being so persistent, they finally just gave me one figure as a test, and it went well. And here we are 4 years and, I don't know, 33 figures later, I think.
Who was that first figure?
Iceberg. Which was
That's not as bad as it could be.
I don't know. What could be worse?
Look, yes, Iceberg is like the third snow guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's not even the coolest guy with skis.
Exactly.
And that is gonna be a problem. Like, was there that moment where you were like, they're like, all right, here's your, you know, you're in. Here's your assignment. You're like, yeah, it's going to be Cobra Commander. It's going to be Destro. It's going to be the Baroness. It's going to be Major Blood. And they're like, yeah, it's Iceberg. Or were you just happy to be there?
Oh, actually, it's funny. I hadn't even really thought about this since then. But at the time, it almost didn't really feel like a real job. And it was kind of surreal because I had kept sending them sample pieces. And then they finally were like, well, we might be able to use you coming up soon. And I said, well, let me give you another sample piece for the zillionth time. And I said, tell me a character you want to see a sample of. And they said, Iceberg. So I drew this iceberg art, and then they write me back and they're like, oh yeah, we like it. Here's what the figure looks like. Can you just change what you already drew and make it look like this current figure? And I was like, oh, so I like kind of did a job that wasn't really a job that turned into a job. So it's like that first one was kind of unceremonious because I'd kind of already done it just to show them that I could.
So iceberg was the first. In the time since, who all have you done? How many have you done, I should say, before I ask you to list them all off?
I was going
to
say, you're really going to be crunching my brain there. I think I've done 33 packages so far, just for toys.
That's a bunch of them. And you've mostly done figures, or have you done any of the vehicles as well?
All figures.
Okay, awesome. I know that you've done a version of Stalker. You've done Psych Out, who's a really cool one. Did you do the Joe Colton?
I did, yep. The James Bond Joe Colton.
Oh, I love that one. That is a great, first of all, great figure. Second of all, great art on that. So good job.
Oh, thank you. That figure was sort of a painful process because I think he had 10 different heads before they finally decided on the one that you actually see. So Joe Colton and I had a painful experience.
Who's your favorite that you've done?
Favorite? That is a tough question. I really like Interrogator. I think that one came out really well. Bomb Strike seems to be really well received, and you don't get a lot of opportunity to do female G.I. Joes, so that one is definitely a standout for me. Wide Scope, because I used myself as the model for it.
Really?
He's me, so by default.
I'm sorry, I'm caught up in you being the model for Wide Scope. Now, that has completely derailed all the thought process. Although I gotta say, if you're gonna be the model for one, you don't want it to be. I know you've also done Cesspool.
Yeah,
you don't want to be Cesspool. You don't want to be Road Pig. You don't want to be any of those guys.
The logic behind Wide Scope was, it was the first white male character I'd done, so I knew I had to do it because I thought if this job ends tomorrow, I have to have at least done this. And B, he's wearing a balaclava, so I thought, you know, it's just my eyes and nose. That's sort of, I can get away with that. And C, he was the first G.I. Joe character to come with a German Shepherd since Law & Order. And Law & Order's art was based on Kirk Bazigian, who was Hasbro's brand manager at the time and someone I'm friends with. So I thought, I'll be in good company if I can, be the only other Joe with a German Shepherd.
So do you have a dog?
I do. I have a miniature Australian Shepherd.
So it's not a German Shepherd. It is not the dog that is included with Wide Scope.
No, it's not. Unfortunately, the dog that's included with Wide Scope looks like he could eat my dog.
he's got that spiked collar. He's terrifying.
Yeah.
Can I just say within the past like couple of minutes, it's starting to feel like you're just messing with me in terms of the names of the characters.
Okay, Kieran, this is good because this will lead into the next thing I want to talk about. What if I told you that Roddy Piper was a part of Cobra?
And I knew that Sergeant Slaughter was a member of G.I. Joe. I'm aware of that. I didn't know Piper was a member of Cobra, but that makes sense.
Piper was a Cobra, but here's the weird thing. That happened this century. Yeah, that happened within the past 10 years.
I thought it was more of a tie-in to rock and wrestling, if anything.
No, that's... Sergeant Slaughter came around in the movie, the G.I. Joe movie. And then, Adam, you tell it, because I'm sure you have the figure.
Of course. Yeah, Roddy Piper was an exclusive for the 2007 G.I. Joe convention in Atlanta, and they had Roddy Piper show up at the show to sign pictures and, put people in sleeper holds and what have you. But that figure was very limited and now is quite valuable, but I guess they decided that 20 years later it would be a good idea to have a foil for Sergeant Slaughter for some reason.
Yeah, had they just recently done a new version of the Sergeant Slaughter figure? Did that happen? Was that the reasoning behind it?
No, I have no idea. In fact, there wasn't the next Sergeant Slaughter figure was, I think, a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive, and that didn't even come till several years later. So I have no idea what the impetus for making Roddy Piper a G.I. Joe character was, but, I mean, the world is a richer place for having it happened. I just, I'm not exactly sure what the line of thinking was in 2007 to turn Roddy Piper into a G.I. Joe.
It's like a decision I would have made.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I thought it was brilliant. I just couldn't fathom in what universe it was occurring, but, I mean, it was awesome.
Because, see, according to his file card, Kieran... Roddy Piper is the trainer for Destro's Iron Grenadiers. So the Scottish G.I. Joe villain that I have used as my face online for 10 years.
I know the main characters. I know your Destros and your Cobra Commanders and Duke.
Yeah, you got it. That's him. Now, the reason I bring this up, Adam, is that you, in addition to your work on the packaging art and the action figures, which people can see at your DeviantArt page, which they should definitely check out, because, I mean, honestly, if you put anything in front of that background, I'm going to be like, yeah, this is cool.
But man, I'm going to start putting everything in front of it.
Oh, like, absolutely. I should carry that background around. That should be... Okay, first of all, quick aside, that should be your convention banner, is just that background.
Man, where were you like 2 weeks ago when I was getting my banners printed?
Okay, well, we haven't gotten ours yet, so we might do that one. Me and Chad might do that one. Go to conventions for the job you want. But you did a cover for G.I. Joe, Real American Hero number 212, which was the Emerald City Comic-Con variant. This was the first part of the completely bananas Death of Snake Eyes story that I wrote about a while back when it happened. And I guess the it's a companion piece to the cover that had come out in 2007 for G.I. Joe America's Elite number 25, because they did a big cover that had all the Joes from Duke and Joe Colton on down to the Fridge, who's the best. Kieran, again, I'll explain it all to you later. Remind me to explain the Fridge to you.
Is it William did a cover. Perry?
Yes, it's William the Refrigerator Perry. He was a special mail-away figure. He had a like a Morningstar, but instead of a spiked ball on the end of a chain, it was a football. So basically the best action figure ever.
Once again, I'm still not sure if you're messing with me.
No, I am, like, Kieran, I'm not getting paid to make anything up right now.
It's too crazy to make up on the spot anyway.
But you drew the cover for Real American Hero 212 that has all the Cobras, that has 280 characters on it.
It does. Well, let me correct something you said first. It's actually an exclusive to Emerald City Comics, which is a comic store in Clearwater, Florida. Because I know they'll be mad if I don't plug up.
That is completely different.
Don't worry, you're only the thousandth person that's asked me, do you still have that Emerald City Con exclusive? I'm like, I do, but... at the time, I had been pitching stuff to IDW forever for wanting to work on G.I. Joe, and it was getting me nowhere, and this is despite, at this point, already having been working on the action figures for a couple of years. And then, finally, talks had ramped up to the point where they decided that, I guess, they were actually going to let me do something, and so I had pitched them this idea, which they liked, because it was just... timing was perfect that it coincided with the Death of Snake Eyes story arc and JoeCon was coming up. Meanwhile, I've been good friends with the owner of this store, Emerald City Comics, for my whole life, and they'd been talking about doing an exclusive. And so I said, well, why don't we try and pitch this to be your exclusive? So we did, and it was accepted. And that's what got the ball rolling on this monster project that took 34 days, and which I need to publicly thank you for promoting.
How quickly did you regret it?
Day two.
How far in the roster were you before you're like, okay, I just drew Nemesis Enforcer. Now I still have 104 of these guys to go.
The America's Elite cover, the one that came out in 2007. If you look at the inside credits for that cover, I think they said they had a research team of like 7 people just compiling information to start working on it, and it was totally up to me to do all of that and draw it. So, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, I was obviously up to the challenge, but I spent a solid week there just like digging through every form of G.I. Joe media I could find for the last 30 years, trying to find any obscure character, because I just knew that I'd put this out and the first thing that would happen is somebody would say, oh, you forgot, insert here, you know, so I really wanted to make sure that wasn't going to happen. And then after doing this crazy amount of research, then it was like building a puzzle. It was drawing up, you know, hundreds of little circles and writing names on them and trying to put all these placeholders and move things around to figure out how this big intricate thing came together. But so really, that was kind of the part where I was pulling my hair out. I mean, once I got to the actual drawing, it was almost mind numbing. It was just like, you know where it goes, now make it happen kind of thing. It just, that make it happen just took a month.
Yeah, and that's something that's really interesting to me, because when you're dealing with that many characters, like... I was curious about it when it happened, because, you know, I wrote it up when it happened as something that I thought was really awesome. But I wondered, like, did you draw, like, each figure individually and then composite them together? Like, is it... Because it seems like once you, you know, like you said, once you start drawing it, you're locked in. Like, once you start, once you put Cobra Commander where he's going, he's got to stay there. And it makes sense to have, you know, the main guys where you have them, because in the front row, it's everybody that you know. It's Storm Shadow, Zartan, Serpentor, Cobra Commander, Destro, Baroness, Billy, Major Blood is there, Tomax and Zaymot. But then it's a wraparound cover, so on the back in the front row, you had to put all the characters that have animals. So yeah, that you could have, like, you know, Croc Master gets a prime position. In this group photo.
I had entertained the idea at one point of, like, having some of them, like, have Croc Master, like, holding the crocodile, like, over his shoulders, just up in the air randomly. But I was like, this is getting too zany. Like, I should probably just, you know, try and keep this a hair normal. Undertow was going to be holding a fish up, you know, but we decided against that ultimately.
Oh, because you don't want this thing to get weird.
No.
You do have multiple snake people and a minotaur on here.
I think you just get jaded after a while. That, you know, that started to seem less and less weird as the work went on.
So I'm currently looking at the cover now, trying to decide who my favorite member of Cobra is, just by looking at the cover. And I've boiled it down to three. So
okay,
there's this guy on the second to top row who is kind of white with spiky hair and looks like a Valiant character. Not any specific Valiant character, just like he'd be a character... for Valiant. Do you see the guy that I mean? He's next to, like, the voodoo looking guy underneath the wings at the top.
I think that is the Sigma 6 character Dark Ninja Master, probably.
That makes sense. This is
that me. Sounds like a Valiant character, to be honest.
Dark Ninja, like, Master.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I don't know who that guy is. I didn't mess around with Sigma 6.
Yeah, that wasn't really my jam either.
The second one is the guy who looks like a kabuki skeleton.
Yeah, that's a good one. That is a good one to note, because he's dead center, too.
And then there's someone that just has, like, a green, like, phallic alien head above the guy in leopard print.
Oh, I think that's Bio Viper, maybe? One of them, is he like a giant monster guy with yellow eyes?
Yeah.
He's the one who's next to the Cobra Viper behind the bat.
Oh, that's Lobotomax, I think. Somebody's gonna get at me for that. It's a Star Brigade figure.
Oh yeah, Kieran, they went to space at one point.
That makes sense.
Larry Hama did not mess around with that one either, so don't worry about not knowing it.
Yeah.
Kieran, I'll tell you who your favorite is, okay?
Okay.
Do you see the guy in the blue hood who's, like, right up front in the front row, standing behind the podium? He's got the Cobra logo on his chest.
Yeah.
Okay, the guy right next to that guy with the red high collar and the metal face, that's your favorite?
His name is James?
Oh?
McCullen.
Yes. James McCullen Destro, the 24th.
The 24th.
I find it very fascinating how you have such intricate trivial knowledge in some areas and then, like, nothing at all in others.
I'm friends with Chris Sims.
Yeah.
You're going to pick up some Destro knowledge. Was there, like... I mean, first of all, I have to ask, did you forget anybody?
I don't know if I forgot anybody. I mean, I've had people come at me with these really, like, minutiae, like, well, you didn't include this person that had this one-shot cameo in the cartoon or whatever. I'm like, well, but if it's, like, a Cobra officer that had a name in one episode, I don't really count that as a character. So I'm going to go ahead and say no. I mean, more characters have obviously come out since this cover was released. So by current standards, yes, but I think I pretty much had it covered at the time.
Okay, next question, and I think one that leads pretty much into it. Was there someone that you were like, that was like a treat, where you were like, okay, if I finish drawing the Alley Viper, if I finish drawing Road Pig, I can go and draw this guy?
I mean, I'm a really obsessive fan of the G.I. Joe movie, the 1987 animated one, just to clarify. So anything Cobra Law, I was really excited about. So, Royal Guard, Pythona, Globulus, Nemesis, Enforcer, which I know you used as an example of, like, the worst character, but those are actually the ones I probably had the most fun drawing, surprisingly. it was hard to really give yourself those like rewards though, because it fit together like such an intricate puzzle that you couldn't really just be like, okay, well, here's the spot to draw the fun one, because you had to make sure everything still fit within this tightly woven thing. So it was much more mechanical than you would think.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be, because, you know, like, obviously you're going to spend, you're going to make sure you get Cobra Commander. Like, Cobra Commander is going to be the guy you want to get the rightest. But then after that, you know, it's just, like you said, a month of solid work.
Yeah, there was a few little fun spots in there. Like, if you look at the spine of the book, I mirrored Zaymot and Tomax and Cobra Mortal, who's a reflective figure standing in between them, because I thought it would be kind of funny to have them admiring their own reflections in him, so that when you flatten the book, they would mirror each other. But after we sent this off to get proofs, they're like, oh, yeah, that's just like a hair off, so that's not really going to line up with the center of the book. And I was like, oh, my God, you're kidding me. So, like, and at this point, I was already in, like, you know, day 25 delirium. So then we started, like, nudging everything over in Photoshop, trying to, so, yeah, I didn't even know that that month is kind of, like, it almost didn't happen. In fact, right now, looking at this just to talk about it with you guys, is probably the first time I've actually looked at this image in months, because it's almost like an out-of-body experience now. Like, I can't believe that I did this. It gave me great empathy for the illustrator of Where's Waldo?
Well, there's one other thing that we wanted to talk about that goes a little beyond the G.I. Joe stuff. You have also recently... Here's what I find fascinating about you, Adam. You are a comics artist. You've done work in comics. We talked a little bit earlier that you broke in with TMNT. Yep. And that is, of course, a very fascinating thing for me. But... you know, the packaging art, the variant covers, the action figure stuff, and you know, now kind of that all coming full circle for you to do the action figure variant stuff. That stuff's really cool, because it's a side of, you know, commercial art that's so tied in with all this stuff, but we don't really talk about it that much. But you've also recently picked up a job where you've designed some pro wrestling gear.
I have.
Which is another thing that's so close.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have just, I haven't really evolved since I was a kid. I pretty much had my whole life's journey locked in around, you know, ages 5 to 7. Like, these are the things I'm going to love forever, and I'm just going to spend the whole rest of my life pursuing them. And those general interests were G.I. Joe, wrestling, Power Rangers, Star Wars, Ghostbusters, Turtles. And, you know, I'm just kind of checking everything off the list one by one. So I had always wanted to be involved in wrestling in some capacity. And I've, you know, growing up in Florida, I've met a ton of wrestlers and I go to a ton of shows. And obviously I was never going to be a wrestler, because artists and wrestlers tend to be the opposite ends of the physical spectrum. I mean, they destroy me. So I knew, though, that I wanted to be involved, and for years I'd actually had the idea of designing ring gear, but I could never figure out who even makes this, how do you get it, because we'll just say WWE, but any wrestling company in general, the company isn't actually who makes the gear. Like, that's all the wrestlers go out and, I guess, find their own people to do that. And so I had no idea how to pursue that. I just knew it was something I wanted to do. And then I saw an interview one time with Daniel Bryan, and he was talking about Jill Thompson designing his ring gear. And I was like, wait, back up the bus. I was like, a comic artist designed his ring gear. And all of a sudden it was like the light bulb went off. I was like, okay, so there is a way to do this. Now I just have to figure out how. And so I started trying to find ring gear makers, and it wasn't really getting me anywhere. And then I heard an interview with Dolph Ziggler last year, and he had mentioned this guy, Rick Michaels, who makes ring gear. And so I sought him out online. And he has a company called Global Wrestleware, and I sent him an email and sent him some work samples and said, you know, I know my work is all like comics and toys, and it looks like it has no relation whatsoever to wrestling, but you're just going to have to trust me when I tell you I'm like the biggest wrestling fan in the world. And I know I could do this, and I know I'd be great at it. And if you'd ever be interested in, you know, working with me, just let me know. Well, never heard back. 4 or 5 months go by. And then I get this random email, and I mean, I almost thought it was somebody playing a rib, brother, because I was like, why is this guy emailing me 5 months later? But it was right before WrestleMania this year, and I get this email, and he's like, hey, man, I've been hanging on to your contact info. Really like your stuff. Everybody needs new costumes for Mania. You want to get involved in designing some stuff? And I was like, oh, yes. So he'd sent me some people that were looking for new gear and kind of just the general notes that they wanted, and just started rolling from there. And so I've designed some stuff for some NXT wrestlers, and I don't know how much I can say beyond that, because I don't think any of them have actually debuted the gear yet, but it looks like we might be doing some more stuff in the future, so we'll see. but it's definitely a dream project.
That's really awesome. Like that is a super fun thing, and you're gonna have to email me and let me know, because I want to see I want to see whose gear you've got, because I thought I might see some at a house show, but because they had a couple people who hadn't debuted on TV yet, but that I don't think happened yet. So let me know when it starts to show up on TV.
I will definitely do that.
Adam, you've done so much. You know, you're doing a lot of work for IDW now. But I think that's as much time as we have to talk about that as far as questions that Kieran and I have. I think we're going to have to kick it over to a few questions from our listeners that are coming in over Twitter. Kieran, if people want to get in on these interviews that we do each and every week, how exactly can they go about that?
Okay, so what you're going to want to do is take a two-week break, go on holiday to San Diego for San Diego Comic Con, take in some time there and just enjoy the sights as well, have a nice break. Come back and reunite with your partner, who you've not seen for a fortnight, and watch G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra immediately. And then afterwards, make an account on twitter.com, sign up for an account, follow Chris, who is at the ISB, and Matt, who is at the Matt D. Wilson, and they'll put out the call 9:30 on a Thursday for questions for the guests like the ones you're about to hear right now.
That's right. Our first question is going to come from AWA64 on Twitter, who would like to know, Adam, do you have any fun stories that you'd like to vent about fun publications?
That they have treated me well and employed me, and I will be a guest at their show, G.I. Joe Con in Loveland, Colorado, this year from June 16th to 19th, so come say hi.
All right. Getter404 would like to know, what is the best Cobra troop, and why is it the Alley Viper? That is not an opinion I share, by the way, but...
Yeah, me either. Well, if it's phrased like that, I guess we're going to have to say because he's orange and blue, and that's a great color scheme for urban street camo when you're trying to blend into concrete.
Do you have a favorite Cobra troop?
Well, I'm inclined to say the Cobra Law Royal Guard, because I army build that figure and I currently have 76 of them, but I don't know if he's really my favorite as much as an obsession.
I was going to start talking about how, like, when I got into the 25th anniversary figures, I got it bad, and I was like buying them all, and I would get, you know, I thought it was bad that I had like five Vipers and, you know, five Red Ninjas, but you have seven, what did you say, 76?
and counting. Well, it's funny, I'd always thought people that army build figures, I was like, what's wrong with these people? Like, why would you want to own hundreds of the same thing? And then when I eventually had finished collecting all the figures, I would still be going to conventions and I'd be like, well, this sucks. What am I going to buy now? And I'd be like, well, I do really love G.I. Joe the movie. He's only a dollar. I'll just get another one, another one, another one. And then I was like, why not get 50? Why not get 75? Why not get 100? Oh, screw it. Let's just keep going until I'm dead. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's become a mild obsession.
Is that like your convention thing now, where you're like, you know, hey, no lines at the table, finally get to take a break, I'm going to go find a Royal Guard.
I know you were actually just saying on a recent episode about how you have like the Dollar Bin comic series that you only collect at cons as like a way to amuse yourself. That's what Royal Guard is for me, but in action figure form.
Yeah, I mean, I can't judge you too harshly. I did buy two complete runs of Punisher 2099 realizing it once. my favorite is, of course, the Televiper, because whatever he's thinking shows up on his face, because he's got the little LED eyes.
Yeah, the intruder alert backwards goggles.
Yeah, they're great. Like, I love them. Xavier Files on Twitter would like to know, what is the other half of the battle?
I think you got me stumped. I don't know, man. That I've heard many different answers to that question. I don't know if I'm really qualified to answer that. I guess it would be on a situational basis.
What was the other half of the battle when it came to drawing that cover with 280 Cobras on it?
Meeting the deadline.
Meeting the deadline is half the battle. That is a G.I. Joe slogan I think people can get behind.
There you go.
Mike Mankowski has a question for all of us. Kieran, I'm going to allow you to substitute the action figure line of your choice for this. But Mike Pankowski would like to know, for all of us, what was your favorite G.I. Joe vehicle that you owned? And Adam, we'll start with you on that.
I have a real fondness for the 1990 Cobra Piranha. It's this little like maroon and yellow boat. I don't know why. I just have fond childhood memories of floating that thing around in a bathtub. So I'm going to go with that.
Okay. Kieran, do you have a favorite action figure vehicle of any kind?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we didn't have G.I. Joe. We had Action Man, who was, I'm pretty sure, the same thing, like reskinned. I don't know. I've heard different accounts about it. But Action Man was our, like, group of army men, like, kind of sci-fi-esque adventures. And I had an Action Man paraglider that you could strap Action Man to. And then, like, there was, like, a little hook, so you could hook him onto the washing line and, like, zip along as if he was flying. But what I did was I tied the washing line from the window of my bedroom at my nan's house down to the ground, and it got about 3 seconds before it just fell around 20 feet and destroyed both the paraglider and the toy.
Man, that's a bummer.
Well, that one day of having that toy was a really good day until then. What about you,
Chris? I am very fond of the Awestriker because it's a dune buggy. And I love the idea that, like, it's like, yeah, you know, the army is going to ride a dune buggy into battle with these international terrorists.
That's like Cross Country's Havoc. He's laying on his stomach in a glass canopy. I'm like, you're just really asking for it, you know?
Vic Perfecto on Twitter would like to know, what's your Storm Shadow preference? Joe, Cobra, Guy Wolf Sitting Timber in Snake Eyes Cabin?
Definitely Joe Ninja Force with the snow pattern outfit.
Oh, so you like Snake Eyes Trilogy era Storm Shadow?
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, really, 89 to 94 is, like, my peak Joe fandom growing up. So, I mean, I'm really into the flashier, like, Andrew Wildman art, all the, like, Ninja Force, Star Brigade, all that really crazy stuff that most people think caused the line to die. Those are my fondest memories.
Look, those are still good comics. Like, that run doesn't start to kind of falter till around like 140. Like it's a pretty good comic. Vic Perfecto would also like to know, this is another one for all of us, but I think we're just going to ask you, Adam, what would your file card code name and specialty be? Now you've already said you used yourself as the basis for Widescope. So yeah, you can't.
Should
use
I just
one.
Read Widescope's? you took away my cheat answer. I don't think G.I. Joe's ever had like a resident combat artist. So I think that would be my specialty. Can have some like a field artist. Maybe we'll go with I don't know, paintbrush or something. I need some really lame name if I'm going to fit into the 80s lineup. So, well,
all right. I think that's going to do it for Twitter questions. And I think that's probably going to do it for our interview as well. Adam, it's been a blast talking to you. I know we only touched on a small part of your career, but you know how I get when I start talking about G.I. Joe.
I understand.
Can you let us know where everybody can find you online and what you're currently working on?
Definitely. I am currently working on G.I. Joe toys, as we've just spent an hour talking about. So look out for those. I got some new stuff coming up at JoeCon, which I'll be a guest at, as I said. I am got a couple of current gigs with IDW right now. I do covers for Micronauts, which from number one on. So I'll be doing toy covers based on new designs, though. So all new looks for the characters. And I'm working on another book with IDW, which unfortunately I'm not allowed to spill the beans on yet, but look for that coming real soon. It's extremely awesome. I wish I could say more. Other than that, if you want to contact me or follow my work, most active on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/AdamRichesArt. I do giveaways, answer questions, show works in progress, tutorials, let you know when and where to get my work, all that good stuff. Otherwise, for the handful of people that don't use social media, I got you covered at adamriches.com.
Our guest has been Paintbrush, primary specialty combat artist. Thank you for joining us on the show. It's been a blast. Please come back sometime and we'll talk about all the rest of the stuff, because Matt won't let me talk about G.I. Joe for another hour, I'm sure.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. It was awesome finally getting to be on here. I know it's been a long time coming. Oh, and also, before I forget, I got to say shout out to my friend Zoe, because I know she's a huge fan of the podcast.
Well, shout out to Zoe. Thank you for listening.
There you go.
thanks once again to Adam Riches for joining us on the show this week. We asked him a lot of questions, and now it's time for us to turn the tables a little bit. Kieran, are you ready to answer some listener questions?
Always.
You're always ready to answer listener questions.
I'm always there. My Twitter is available. My Tumblr is available. Just shoot questions at me all the time. I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. Kieran's good. Kieran's fired up. This is a good one. This is a question that has come over our Tumblr. It is from an anonymous Tumblr user who says, what are some great classic Archie stories to check out? I think Chris expressed fondness for the Elevenaire at some point. Kieran, how much Archie have you read in your life?
Mostly the modern stuff, Afterlife with Archie, and the reboot stuff. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, like any specific stories. It's more just like panels that I've seen. And a lot of stuff that I've seen from like reading like your work and Chris Bird's work when he was doing the unlettered Archie parodies from about probably 10 years ago, so ago now. But that, like, I only really know the weirdest Archie stuff from people like yourself covering it. Like in England, we had like the Beano instead, which is probably the closest thing to Archie.
Yeah. Now, do you? What's the what is the most widely available comic over there? Because the deal with Archie in America for so long was that, you know, when I was a kid going back to like the 60s and 70s, Archie was the comic you could get in every grocery store. Like still today, if you go to, you know, if you go to a Walmart or a Kroger, any grocery store, they're going to have a rack at the checkout counter and at the checkout lane that has like Soap Opera Digest and Archie's in it at every grocery store. So is there something like, could I go to, what is it, Sainsbury's?
Yeah.
Could I go to Sainsbury's and grab a copy of 2000 AD?
Possibly. I wouldn't be surprised. I never really got into 2000 AD when I was a kid because I think I was a bit too young for it. And then when I came back into comics around 17, it was mostly American stuff. So I never read 2000 AD weekly. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was there. When I was growing up, it was the Dandy and the Beano were the standards. The Dandy was a little bit older than the Beano, but they're the like the gold standard of British comics. They were more anthology titles. So in the Beano, you'd have like Dennis the Menace, which, as we covered in last week's episode of Journey to Misery, Dennis the Menace is a different Dennis the Menace to the American Dennis the Menace.
Mm-hmm.
Like Meanie the Minx, Billy Whiz, like bunch of like different like 4 or 5 pages, like that was mainly it. Another Dandy moved to Dibs Lonely a couple of years ago, which was a big shame for like British comics. The Phoenix isn't as widely available, but is always excellent.
A lot of the Phoenix is great.
The comics that I see when I have a look at the stands, I don't really have a look at the stands. It's always like Avengers magazines, like Lego stuff. Like Disney stuff, it seems to be like mostly licensed these days, like specifically stuff created with licensed properties for this children's magazine.
That's interesting. Does not answer the question we were asked, though, mm-hmm. But I'm curious. I have curiosities. So here's what I would recommend. If people are like you, Kieran, if you're coming into Archie with the new stuff, which, you know, I like a lot, obviously we're big fans of Erica here on the show, and Chip, and the upcoming Ryan North and Derek Charm. That run on Jughead's going to be awesome. Wade and Veronica Fish are continuing to do great stuff. So if you're coming to it from that stuff, that's fine. Like, that's all really good stuff. But if you want a taste of the classic Archie, it is very easy to get a whole lot. I cover them on comics or on Comics Alliance all the time, but Archie's been doing these, you know, big digital, essentially digital collections, like, you know, 100-page long collections. What would be a trade paperback if it was actually printed in paper, that are built around themes, and they're usually built around some really, really cool stuff. You can get one that's all just, you know, Reggie stories, or all stories of Veronica interacting with her dad, or all stories of Archie doing sports. It's really, it's the Archie 75 series, I think is what it's called. because they're celebrating the 75th anniversary of Archie. But if you're looking for specific stuff, I hesitate to recommend this one because it does kind of require a little bit of knowledge of the characters. But honestly, you know what the Archie's deals are. Like you can pick it up. You know what Jughead's deal is. You know what Archie's deal is. Jughead number 200 is literally the best Archie comic of all time. It's got everything. It was one of the first big, I want to say it was the first variant cover Jughead or Archie comics had ever done. It's from 2010. And the story is that Jughead sells, his most valuable possession to a witch. And it turns out that his most valuable possession is, his metabolism. So that's why he can eat all the time and stay so thin. So all of his friends in turn are selling their core parts of their personality to this witch to help Jughead. So Jughead gets his metabolism back, but Archie sells his kind heart, and Veronica sells her status, and Betty sells her niceness. And it's a really good story that plays with how all of those characters work. Like I said, it's my favorite Archie story ever. I would absolutely recommend it. If you're interested in just like something that'll give you a little more of a survey, the kind of mid-aughts run of Tales from Riverdale Digest, I think they've gotten most of those issues on Comixology, and those were the best thing Archie was putting out at the time. I actually just wrote about a story from one of those at Comics Alliance, and you can pick up one of those, and it's going to have each one leads with a new story, but you're also going to have the rest of the digest is all reprints. So read a couple of those. If you like them, give Jughead number 200 a shot. Also, the 11 Air is great. There's a fantastic issue of Veronica that has the 11 Air in it. So, yeah, that is where you should go with your Archies. Our next question, I think we're only going to do a couple this week. Our next one is also going to come from an anonymous Tumblr user who wants to know, what comic book fight or confrontation felt most like a WrestleMania main event? Kieran, any thoughts on this one?
The first one that jumps to mind immediately, as soon as I heard the word fight, I didn't know I was going to the WrestleMania thing, so this isn't my answer. Whenever someone says comic book fight, my mind immediately goes to Daredevil versus Bullseye. That's not my answer, though. Once the question was completed, my mind went to Orion versus Darkseid.
That Orion versus Darkseid fight, you're talking about Orion number 5, yeah. Right? Yeah, that I'm pretty sure we've talked about that issue on the show before. It's Walt Simonson just drawing a full issue, no dialogue, just sound effects of Orion and Darkseid beating the shit out of each other. That one's awesome. And it also feels like WrestleMania because it takes place in an arena with all the fourth world characters in attendance.
I kind of feel that we should pick apart the question and be like, okay, which fight is the most like a WrestleMania main event? So which fight was the most anticipated but ultimately underwhelming?
Well, see, here's what I was going to say. I was going to say Batman versus Bane in Nightfall, because Batman essentially has to go through a Royal Rumble to get there. He has to fight off like 30 other guys.
That's true. That is true. It's more of a SummerSlam main event, though, because the heel wins.
Right, right. It's not like that Nightfall did not send the crowd home happy. Let's see. I think Daredevil versus Bullseye fight's a pretty good one. Do we have any like long-standing rivals who had a kind of disappointing conflict, like a disappointing face-to-face? There was that Superman versus Darkseid story from, I want to say, like 2000 or 2001.
The one with Batman and Superman, the Michael Turner.
No. This is the one that was in a one-shot that I want to say Mark Schultz wrote it, but I don't know who drew it. And Superman just like gives Darkseid to like swells his eyes shut so that he can't use the Omega beams. The one in Superman Batman where Superman just kind of pushes him against the source wall. That one's not so good either.
I was thinking when you mentioned Superman, Superman versus Zod from For Tomorrow.
I do not recall that one. I know I read that story.
Just because that was a really, like, for the amount of people that really apparently like that story, I hate that story so much. And I feel like Superman and Zod is always a fight that you'd expect to be great, but it never is.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. You know what it is? You know what the one that's like most like a good WrestleMania main event is?
Go on.
It's Thor versus Hela. in the Simonson run, when Thor, like, you know, Thor gets his face all scarred up and he has to, like, wrap his cape around his fist so that he can fight her. And it's got, you know, that whole story is like, you know, the, like, Scourge is on the undercard in that story, you know, like Scourge is in the battle royal that happens midway through the show. That's, you know, and it works because Scourge and the Bridge, that's the Savage Steamboat of that storyline. But Thor versus Hela is still really good.
I've got one more answer.
Okay.
Daredevil versus Kingpin from Daredevil number 50 by Bendis and Maleev. The one where he beats the tar out of the Kingpin. And it's like one of the things Bendis likes to do for anniversary issues is it's not just Maleev. He'll bring, like, each page is like a different iconic Daredevil artist.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that was a good one.
It ends with Daredevil putting the Kingpin's prone body on a car and driving the car into Josie's. So it crashes through the front of Josie's and Kingpin just, like, slides off. And then Daredevil gets out of the car and cuts a promo.
That's a good one. I think Superman and Doomsday are another good one because Doomsday is such a Vince McMahon creation. You know? He's such the monster. He's such a Bray Wyatt who has one story and then, you know, Superman, this is where the power lies, brother.
I'm going to go with that one, partly because I can imagine the Raw before that WrestleMania ending with Doomsday fighting Booster Gold and Bloodwind and everyone else. You know, when he just goes through everyone.
Yeah, slams his head in a car door even. He's like, Doomsday is the Brock Lesnar of that storyline. But it ends in a double KO. WrestleMania would never end in a double KO.
That is true. Unless The Rock comes out and restarts it like WrestleMania 27.
Well, that's in the... Do you have the new version of the Death of Superman paperback? Because that's how it ends. That's
exactly how it ends.
The Rock comes out and restarts the match and Superman wins.
It was a weird one because it was kind of like Fumetti, where they just got pictures of The Rock.
All right, that does it for listener questions. We're cutting that segment a little bit short this week because Kieran... last time you were here, last time you guest hosted, you gave us a list for the Every Story Ever list. And you said that you wanted this week to give us a list of characters for panel president. And I have my pen out. I'm ready to write these down for when Matt gets back. So who is your list?
Okay, so on Journey to Misery, we do a similar thing where after every episode, we rank the good guys and the bad guys on Big Master List that was inspired by Every Story Ever.
Oh, but like you've got the good egg, bad egg list.
Yeah, it's a Helena's favorite good eggs and bad eggs. So I want to give you the top five bad eggs because I think you have some of the good eggs, but I don't think you have any of the bad eggs, any of the top five bad eggs. So this is from 5 to 1. And stop me if any of these are already on the list. So the five are Captain Cold.
Okay.
The Kingpin. Professor Zoom.
Okay.
Your Bard Thor. Okay. Number 2 is Darkseid. And Chris, do you remember who number 1 is? The perpetual number 1?
On the bad egg list? I don't.
Stiltman.
Stiltman's pretty good, I gotta say. I'm gonna warn you right now, Kieran. I don't think Stiltman's gonna beat Darkseid on our list. That does it for the show, everybody. Kieran, thank you for being here and filling in and doing all the hard work on the show. As everybody knows, Matt does the editing, so when he is gone, I not only have to find a guest host, I have to find a guest editor. So Kieran, thank you so much for stepping up to do that. I really appreciate it every time that you fill in on the show. And thanks once again to Adam Riches.
Yeah.
Anybody you want to thank, Kieran? Want to throw some thanks out there?
Well, I'll say, like, I'm someone who has legitimately listened to Ajax. I've said it before on the show, I've listened to Ajax since episode 1. So it's a genuine honor whenever I get a chance to be on the show. Like I mentioned, this is my 5th time on the show now. I've been on it. This is my 3rd time as a host, and I've been on it twice as a guest, once for WrestleMania and once for the King of Trios episode. So I always really, really enjoy being on Ajax, and I hope people aren't too disappointed that Matt isn't here, because I'm always like, I love being on Ajax, but there's also part of me that's like, I don't have Ajax to listen to this week.
You can listen to it again. Like, listen, I listen to Sailor Business every week.
I don't even listen to Journey to Misery.
Honestly, mainly it's because it's been like 2 weeks since, like, we record Sailor Business in advance, so I need to make sure that I'm not repeating myself when we do the next episode. But yeah, Kieran, you're I would say you're always welcome, but you know, usually we do have a guest, but you can come back anytime you feel like it. Just give us some vacation days and we'll call you. Everybody, if you have enjoyed Kieran's role guest hosting this show, check out Journey into Misery. It's great. It's fun. It's not as mansplaining as it sounds. I promise. I know that's your catchphrase, Kieran.
It's kind of the inadvertent catchphrase, because if anyone isn't aware, the hook of the show is I explain complicated comics continuity to my fiance, Helena, and it's really built on her reactions. And I think if she wasn't as enthusiastic, it would come across a lot more mansplaining. But it's a really fun time. This week coming up, it'll be 2 days from when you're listening to this. Last week we just had The Vision. This week's episode is The Authority. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Helen about The Authority and Midnighter and Jenny Sparks and all that. So that's going to be a really fun episode.
Yeah, and I promise we will talk about Civil War when Matt's back. Because Kieran, I know you saw it, but you've also written a little bit about it, I'm sure.
Yeah, and part of me wants to listen to that conversation more than be a part of it, because I can talk to you about Civil War pretty much whenever I want, but I want to hear you and Matt talk about it on Ajax.
Kieran, before we actually get out of here, where can we find you online?
Well, and this is something that I still absolutely take so much pleasure in saying, partly because I've heard you and Matt say it so often. You can find me pretty regularly now at Comics Alliance. Almost daily, not necessarily daily, but I usually have something going on. I've got a few regular gigs there this week in Spandex with the other guest chair, L. Collins. That's always a fun time. The Replacements, loads of stuff going on at Comics Alliance. I am at King Impulse on Twitter. You can find Journey to Misery at JIM Podcast on Twitter or jimpodcast.com if you want to find the website. Everything else, just use Google and I assume you'll find it. I know that the Ajax listeners are a smart and resourceful lot, so if there's something they're after, I'm sure they can hunt it down.
And of course, everybody can find me on Twitter at the ISB. That's also my my Tumblr, and my website is the-isb.com. You can find comics I've written and comics that Matt has written on Comixology. And you can find X-Men 92 Volume 0, War Zones. That is available on Amazon now or at your local comic book shop. Fourth issue of X-Men 92 is out June 1st. So get ready for that one in a couple weeks. And yeah, I think that's everywhere you can find me. And with that, the show is now over. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 303. We'll be back next week. Matt will be back. I'll be back. We'll have a new guest. Kieran will be out there somewhere listening in listener land. Kieran, thanks again. Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah! Flash. Hey, Flash! From this day on, at every breed of mongrel.
Chris?
Yes?
We didn't do Where to Find Us.
Oh! Alright, listen. You can patch it all in. You can fix it.
It's fine. I'll sort it.
Alright. Real quick.